If I may say, most respectfully, sir, if I may say, you know, we know, Pete Antonacci went to FDLE and told Jerry Bailey, retire or resign. He was forced out of his job. He did not resign voluntarily. Would you agree with that, sir?
I'll tell you that Commissioner Bailey did a great job. Commissioner Swearingen's going to do a great job. The cabinet approved him today. We have a 43-year low in our crime rate. We're going to continue to make sure this is safe for people to live in, because it's safe.
But with all due respect, sir, don't you...
Good morning. It's time for the Morning Edge here on WWPR 1490 AM. Heard Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 9 AM to 10 AM. I'm Henry Reyes. Here's Augie.
Good morning, Tampa Bay. And I just do not know. I will repeat myself from Friday. Who are my friends? Who are our friends? With friends like this, who needs enemies? A governor that lies. A former Secretary of Defense who says that Saudi Arabia is a moderate and a friend of ours. What kind of nonsense is passing for what we should know from leadership and what we do know? But we do know one thing. We have some real friends, and one of those real friends is Rick on the radio, and Rick is about to talk to you from a distant place.
Good morning, Rick.
Morning, Rick.
Well, good morning, guys.
Morning, Rick.
It's been a pleasure for me over the years to follow you guys, and honestly, I wouldn't have ever been on the radio if it weren't for you, Henry. So if anyone wants to blame anyone, they should blame you.
Uh-oh, Henry, you get a lot of blame, and now you get this kind of blame, too, from a real friend like Rick. So what do you feel in these days, Rick?
Well, I'm feeling that the people of Manatee County made a huge mistake in not picking the best candidate for commissioner at large, which was by far...
Are you there?
Dr. Terry Munder.
Okay. You should be able to hear Rick. I'm going to bring you on in a second.
Well, you know, she's about to come on and talk to you, I suppose, at the same time. So, You've remarked about Terry Wonder before. You referred to her as Dr. Terry Wonder, and she talks about the issues of the Middle East and so on. So are we going to bring Terry on right now?
Rick, I know there's a music here that I know speaks for you and speaks for her both. It's big-time operators, and I know you both feel the same way about that.
But underneath they were thugs. And they spread malicious rumors, threatening to have me busted for drugs. They had nothing on me. Oh man, I was really clean. But they were big time operators.
So Rick, the chain's unbroken. We have Terry Wonder on the line too.
Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Rick.
Yes, Terry.
I'm so stunned, and I'm so sorry you're in such condition that you're in. I really am sorry. But I just want to thank you for your support. You were just great, and we're going to miss your radio program. And I know I speak for the animal welfare activists too. And I have someone special here with me. His name is Reverend Livingston of the Eternity Temple in Palmetto, and we're here celebrating Martin Luther King Day by planting a garden. And Reverend Livingston, I'm on the phone on the Morning Edge 1490 AM with Augie and Henry, and also Rick on the radio, who is in hospice care now, and I wonder if you would like to say a few words for our dear friend and radio personality and good Democrat, Rick on the radio.
Here we are at Eternity Temple, 716 29th Street East Palmetto. Come on over, guys. We have plants that are going into the ground as I speak. We have hands that are getting dirty, and we're spreading the pine needles in between, and we have 20 beds. We also have grapes. We have blackberries that are going to be growing. And we have a host of young people that, for the first time, they will be doing gardening. And so this next generation, we're going to teach them how to feed this into the county fair each year. And I want to make sure that as we harvest this, one day we will have meals at the church from the garden. That's the plan.
This is wonderful, so, Terry.
Terry, yeah. Rick on the radio here, because we really want to hear from him. Can you stand by, please?
Yes.
Thank you.
Stand by.
Sorry for the coughing, boys and girls.
What's that, Rick?
Well, I have stage 4 lung cancer, so sorry for the coughing.
You're sorry about the coffee?
Coughing.
Oh, the coughing. Oh, I thought maybe...
It's 1490, Rick.
Don't worry about it. We all cough and sneeze at the same time. We don't know when to stop, Rick.
We don't even know what's coming next, Rick. So your cough would just break up the... whatever it is that's going on here
certainly
today.
Certainly change the pace of things. Well, you heard about the Victory Garden being built, and I suppose that Terry's at the heart of what's at the earth, and of course she's been at the heart of what's happening with the mangrove.
But let's go back to you, Rick, because what else would you like to say to the audience? How is Bobby Joe and Mike and the family?
Well, everyone's taking it very well, and hospice could not be greater. They have been so kind and so helpful. This is a hard time for me because something is finally going to shut me up.
Boy, that is a damnable situation to shut you up. I mean, what the heck? Who has the right to do that anyway?
Well, I think the good Lord might.
Oh, okay.
Well, Rick, I just want to take a moment because you are part of, as I said on Friday, in a little more obtuse way, part of a chain here at WWPR. It wasn't just you that started as a caller on this station and went on. Augie started as a caller. I started as a caller. And going back to Bud Beck and who knows before, because this is the oldest station in Manatee County, but you've brought other people on the air.
And it's a continuum that just doesn't stop, your followers and our followers now will be the action of the future and the continuum that we look forward to.
Well, here's my real sense of humor. A stalker of mine, why don't you follow me here?
You never know, he may be right on your tail.
I tell you what, if I'm going to be looking down, you won't be able to avoid me now. I'll know where to find you.
Well, you know, if you've ever been in that afterlife situation, and personally I have, you sort of look down on everyone at some point, and not necessarily with contempt, but you have a way of spiritually looking down, and that does kind of haunt people.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm okay with it all, ladies and gentlemen. And that's the beauty of it. I've had such a great family, and Val and you guys and everybody have provided me, and Terry Wonder, with hope for the future. So I go willingly.
Well, Rick, hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you again in the near future, and in my personal job, I know it may not be you're thinking about right now, but I've talked to people that go on and off hospice, and one lady had been on as many as 3 times and was off again. So I'm not going to give up on Rick on the radio in one format or another, or in one location or another. But
neither will I.
Rick, thanks for taking the time and all the energy this morning. And I hope we talk to you again real soon.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you, Rick.
Thanks for letting me say goodbye.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Okay.
Well, we have Terry Wonder standing by. We've got a few minutes before Mitch Perry comes on. I know we want to hear about how the protests went in Palmasola and maybe some other topics here. Terry, welcome back.
Well, thank you very much. Reverend Livingston would like to dedicate the community gardening project that we have here today, the work that we're here today, to Rick. So if you don't mind, I'd like to just give you back to Reverend Livingston just for a prayer.
Sure. What about 1 minute or so and come back to you and your report on what's happened?
Rick, this is Pastor Lawrence Livingston.
I believe that
a plan for prayer is always in order. Father, we delight that Rick is listening in and he has challenges of his life that you fully know about. And so as we dedicate this garden to him today, the plants are going in the ground and they're going to give life. And they're going to feed a lot of people. And so we thank you for allowing us to dedicate this to Rick and for him to know that he's a part of this project.
Thank you so much,
in Jesus' name, amen.
Okay.
All right, can you give us your report on what the status of the mangrove situation is? Tell us what the issue is.
Well, there's just something in the air right now. You know, we've got problems over in West County with the mangroves, and then over here in Palmetto, we're growing things, and we're celebrating the life of what comes from our earth. So yeah, we had a big protest there out at the Palmasola Bay Club trim site number 1 on Palmasola Boulevard on Friday, and we had about 30 people out. We had about 30 people out there, and They were just amazing. We even had people from Sarasota come up to Manatee County for the protest.
Terry,
and we just wanted to put property owners who illegally cut mangroves on notice that we will litigate. And that's what we were all about the other day. And we're going to have more protests.
Terry,
too.
And who are we that will litigate? Who are we?
And who are they?
And who are they?
We consist of 3 primary groups. The Suncoast Waterkeeper, which is presided by an environmental attorney named Justin Bloom. Vice President is Andy Millay. Also, Manasota 88, with Glenn Compton and Barbara Hines as President and Vice President. Barbara Hines is a former attorney, though she no longer practices, but she's a great advisor. And also the Sierra Club, which is presided by Linda Jones. And we have, as part of the Manatee Conservation faction of the Minnesota Sierra Club, Sandy Ripberger, and she is an attorney. And we're fed up, and we present science. We present
Terry, could you give us a second here?
Terry, what is the issue? I don't think we've ever laid that out for the audience.
Ah, well, the owner of the Palmasola Bay Club acquired a permit with sanctioning by the Board of County Commissioners. They acquired a state environmental protection permit to trim their mangroves according to a law that was passed back in 1996. Allowing property owners to trim mangroves, which we don't have any dispute with that. It's what they did to these mangroves that's the problem.
So did they more than trim, or what did they do?
They killed mangroves, and they improperly trimmed other mangroves to the point where they will probably die.
And the purpose of all this trimming was?
The purpose of this was to provide viewing windows for the residents of the Palmasola Bay Club who will be living in these condos that they're developing across from the conservation easement on the bay.
And it's strictly for that, and the mangrove, for those people who are unfamiliar with what mangrove do or are valued for, give us a little synopsis on that if you would.
Oh my goodness, where shall I begin? First of all, they stabilize shorelines. They prevent erosion, which basically means they exist on that conservation easement on Palmasola Bay to prevent the road that's nearby from washing out and, ultimately, causing problems for people. They provide windbreaks from high, from tropical storms. They provide flood breaks from storm surge. They prevent, they keep our bays clean because they act as kidneys from runoff.
Filters, if you will. Filters.
Pardon me?
Kidneys in lieu of filters, right?
Yes, they act as filters. So any kind of pollutants from higher ground that wash off into the bay, they slow the problem down. If they're not there, if the mangroves don't exist, then we end up with filthy water.
Terry, having grown up here, I've probably literally driven down that road thousands and thousands of times before there was really even houses on three quarters of it. And I missed it, but I drove by. It's near a preserve that the county's starting with lots of mangroves there. And I drove by a lot of mangroves, and the area that seemed to be affected, maybe I didn't get the right perspective. It only looked to me maybe, 10 yards long, something like that. I didn't see that much.
Is there a 30-foot stretch or what?
The trouble is that the area where they did all the illegal cutting, you can't see it from the roadway because they're hiding behind a large sea grape tree that they did not defoliate. So unless you get out of your car and you walk behind the sea grape tree and you start, getting over there in the marsh.
Sneaky son of a gun.
See it from the road what they did.
Well, Terry, let me ask this question. If the sea grape tree is one that prevents you from viewing the situation, why doesn't the sea grape also prevent the viewing of the water that this is supposed to provide the viewing of?
Well, the sea grapes are not a protected species. The mangroves are.
Well, that's an odd thing. You've got a protected species they're cutting and a non-protected that they're not, and yet...
Yes,
well, why would they do
that? Question, why
do
they leave the unprotected species relatively foliated and then violate the law for...
Well, what is your opinion on that?
Mangroves?
Terry, what is your opinion?
I've been at this for a couple of years now with the environmental movement, and I just think it was concealment.
Well, if you've got a tree blocking the view and a sea grape, and you've got mangrove that's behind it, how can that open up the view if the sea grape's still there? Is there intention?
Well, that's a great question, and so far the developers haven't been able to answer that question. They're just pleading ignorance. They say, well, we hired a certified mangrove arborist to oversee the cutting.
That's our defense sometimes.
That's all they say.
Terry, we've got another guest coming up. I knew Augie had other things he wanted to talk to you about.
I do want to make mention of the comment from Leon Panetta yesterday, who, as a friend of the country, as a former Secretary of Defense, who said...
He's wonderful.
Isn't he wonderful?
Well, I'll get Mitch Perry on the line while you continue.
Yeah, and what he's so wonderful about, he said that of all of our allies, the moderate Saudi Arabia is one of our best. You're laughing.
Yeah.
You're laughing. Why are you laughing?
Well, Saudi Arabia is divided, and parts of the families in Saudi Arabia, some of the tribes that are part of the monarchy are moderate, but then there's this Al Sheikh family that's not moderate, and they're the ones that control the judiciary and also religious education in the kingdom.
Religious education is where we're getting a lot of the jihadists, isn't that right?
Yeah, well, all over the world you have a type of imam that I prefer to call a political imam.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to practice an incredibly purist version of Islam.
They think
they can know what was happening when the Prophet Muhammad was alive.
Right, and it's called puritanical.
Causing conquest.
Wouldn't it be called puritanical in a better word of the word pure? There's 17 million Muslims in Europe overall, mm-hmm. with the different countries. And they're getting these people to come down to Syria, fight the war, or stay and go back home and fight the war there, as what's happening in France. And then you've got Fox News running around saying there's places where you You cannot go. There are no go places, as they put it on Fox. Hannity, or Insanity, as I like to call him, was number one in saying this. And these have now been disproved to the extent that Fox has had to turn back what they said and say it wasn't so, say it isn't so. What was it? Well, I heard that somewhere else, the Black Sox scandal. But nonetheless, we've got a situation of trying to understand the nature of ISIS. And I'm beginning to think that ISIS might just be receiving monies from Saudi Arabia, as well as training, as well as education, through the madrasas and so on, and through these special places from the kingdom. What are your thoughts?
Well, I know Iraq better than the other countries because I was there. And the areas in Iraq where they have taken over were what I would call weak tribal areas.
In terms
of? They were weakened. They had their social structure just obliterated during the war. Mm-hmm. And it was all warring factions that caused that. And in the absence of strengthening the social structure of those areas, ISIS is going to be able to penetrate there. They've assassinated district police chiefs in those areas over the past few years. Ever since we withdrew from Iraq and U.S. forces essentially lost situational awareness there, and the Sunni Arabs in that area lost our protection due to the fecklessness of the Maliki government, we've seen one district police chief after another be assassinated. Well, those district police chiefs are also tribal leaders, and so those areas lose confidence, and it was just ripe for Islamic State to move back in into an area that they had occupied during the insurgency, that then was later liberated by multi-coalition forces. But then after the drawdown, we're in the second wave of insurgency now.
So the waves of insurgency are going to continue, and ISIS is going to keep on going. It's going to take some interveners in the Middle East to side with the West, so to speak, and try to bring some leveling, and or Muslims who are saying enough of this misrepresentation of Islam. And,
yes, and it's happening. It's just slow going. I mean, you know, we had a Jordanian Air Force pilot. Yeah. Be kidnapped. So, these countries
Terry,
work with us.
The problem is people are running out of patience on this and probably going to push other people into erratic and serious misbehavior in this situation. So how do we get a handle on this is where the question comes, and how does the West respond to this without over-responding?
Well, I don't believe that we need mass number of forces like we did during the surge.
Mm-hmm.
I think some targeted sweetening with some special forces and military advising in those areas that where we were before that we know about to rebuild some confidence will help. There are Iraqi divisions that are very strong. We know where they are.
So we have some means.
And the other thing that we need to do is we need to get the different Iraqis, the Kurds, the Shia, and the Sunni, working together to utilize the internally displaced persons who are able-bodied males. We need Sunni Kurds working next to Sunni Arabs who have fled as internally displaced people in their areas.
Very collaboration is what you're talking about.
So that Iraqi security forces can get to know the tribal communities as well as multi-coalition forces came to know the tribal communities when we were there before.
Well, the collaboration you're suggesting, we need a bigger conversation at another time.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to switch over to Mitch Perry, who's
Thank you, Terry.
On the line.
You can listen to Terry on Tuesdays and Thursdays between 9 and 10 here at the station with Mitch Mallett, and we'll be looking forward to that. Thank you, Terry.
Thank you, Terry.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
And now we're going to Mitch Perry. Mitch Perry currently with St. Peter's Blog. I think we caught him right after he switched to stpetersblog.com from Creative Loafing, for those of you that didn't catch up on that. And he's with us. And he just came from an event today. Augie, good morning, Mitch.
Good morning, Henry. Good morning, Augie. Yeah, actually, still going on. Joe Madison, I don't know if you know him, progressive talk show host, is a keynote speaker at the Tampa Martin Luther King breakfast this morning. that started at the ungodly hour of 6:45 and is still going on right now. Well, but it just peaked out so I could talk to you guys.
Yeah, well, now do you hear the echo in anyone's ears, liar, liar, pass on fire, scot-free of the truth, or something like that? Or?
You're referring to Rick Scott, the incident with Gerald Bailey? Oh, my. Yeah, isn't that something?
Explain that to our audience. We didn't really have time to set the table before you came on.
Yeah, right. Well, basically, right, last month, you know, Gerald Bailey, the FDLE chief for Florida Law Enforcement Agency, not law enforcement agency in the state, you know, Governor Scott announced he had stepped down, and, you know, it was kind of a little funky. Some people noticed that, you know, like there was really no reasoning why. But then again, you see, especially in second term coming in, you know, that different cabinet change, you know, people change. We've seen differences in the education commissioner or, you know, also some other DEP, right? So, you know, it didn't seem that crazy at the time. The problem is that Gerald Bailey never resigned. He came, you know, told people this week, or last week, actually, after Rick Scott, you know, told his colleagues on the cabinet, Attorney General Pam Bondi, Agricultural Commissioner Adam Putnam, and Chief Financial Officer Jeff Atwater, that, in fact, let's vote this new guy in now, because Bailey stepped down. But, in fact, Bailey says, I was told to quit. And he's basically saying it was political pressure that ultimately was his demise. And this is a pretty serious thing, you guys, because, you know, Rick Scott basically has been accused of being a liar. And, you know, just as importantly, the cabinet officials have been made to hang out to dry, because they've been embarrassed on this now, because they went along with Rick Scott, because Rick Scott just said, you know, he's resigned. When in fact, as Alex Sink has pointed out, the former CFO, you need a second official on the cabinet to actually vote to change the leadership of the FDLE. And of course, you know, they voted on, you know, they didn't vote to fire him, right? They voted because they were told that he resigned, but he didn't resign. And Bailey, just over the weekend, is making more comments to the Tampa Bay Times about how he was being asked to hire certain people that Scott wanted to bring in, the like. So this thing, you know, we'll see, but
there's money
kind of
involved.
Deal.
There's money involved here. The donation money that he was expected or asked to or demanded that they demanded he handle or receive and accept is involved. There's some large sums. Large in some terms. There's a $25,000 amount, and I understand there was a $90,000 amount. What is that about?
I'm not so up on those details, Augie. I just know that, in fact, you know, again, we've heard what Bailey has said. What the governor needs to do, ultimately, because it may be done for him in terms of who's going to investigate this. There's talk about how, for a lot, they were asked to pay for certain things that were political events, and FDLE said, we don't do that. And Bailey, you know, there's this fine line between, what we do and politics. We're not going to get into that. So, we don't know the whole particulars, as it were. They've got to come clean. You know, I was at a press conference on Friday with Senator Bill Nelson held in Tampa, and actually the story kind of spread out after I wrote about it, because Nelson suggested that the Justice Department may start looking into this. Now, we don't know that for sure right now, but he said they may be, you know, I don't know if he knows anything more than what he said to the reporters on Friday.
Well, the Tampa Bay Times article that came out that you alluded to with the other allegations or descriptions that former FDLE Chief Bailey talks about, you know, those are getting to the point of interfering with a federal, or rather another state's investigation and some of the investigations. It's a very political use of the FDLE.
Right.
Which, you know, I imagine that we could probably go back in history and find something where they've been on the edge of political activity, but this really crosses a lot of lines that have been drawn in the sand for a while.
And I think the thing is, you know, look, Rick Scott, I mean, you know, you're hearing some people already say, well, you know, lame duck. Well, that's, you know, a real premature, right? He just got reelected. But you know, and he did, by the way, his choice of the chairman of the party, chairwoman, Leslie Dow, did lose on Saturday, incidentally. But this is not going to go away. I mean, you know, we hear, look, there have been many, many scandals in all types of administrations, you know? I mean, this happens in government. But I do think, you're right, Henry, it gets to the point where the FDLE is supposed to have, and it is, and that's what we're all, you know, understanding, unless Gerald Bailey is not telling the truth, is, you know, we're not going to go there. I mean, we're a government position, but unlike other positions, we're not going to be dictated by by what the governor wants when it comes to political choices. And, you know, a lot of this blame is being put on some of the governor's people that they, I think the Times called them the Louisiana Mafia, that includes Governor Scott's new chief of staff, a woman named Melissa Sellers, actually. And so there may be, who knows, maybe the state, so the legislature will commit hearings to this.
Aren't there actually three former members of Bobby Jindal's staff on the governor's staff now?
That's right, yes. That's
what,
right.
Why
they all, you know, came on, you know, that is kind of interesting, but they're dubbed the Louisiana Mafia, and, you know, Rick Scott was already with Adam Hollingsworth, his previous chief of staff, had, you know, that guy had a little, some issues here, but again, it's like, you know, and then Melissa Sellers is relatively young, I think she's in her early 30s, I mean, I just think that, you know, it just seems like that they just, Where's the governor's own general counsel on these things, right? His attorney to know what you can and what you can't do.
Mitch,
he may have just played a fire on this thing.
Mitch, doesn't this echo back to the 75 times somebody took the Fifth Amendment in a grand jury hearing? Oh my gosh, it was Mr. Scott himself.
You were referring to right, Governor Scott. Maybe he is sometimes not being forthright.
The other element
kind of crazy,
here.
Right? I mean. Governor Scott is famous for not answering questions in press conferences. And it's one thing if it's the press, and it's another thing if it's on tape, like those you know, his you know, they played those, Charlie Crist ran those ads, you know, and it worked in 2010. Alex Sink didn't work, Rick Scott's previous history with HGA Columbia. But I think that when he tried to answer the press last week about this, he just looked like very foolish.
Well,
right?
we have some audio.
Well,
you
really make people sound stupid so long. Where he's just saying, when he's coming out and saying, Gerald Bailey. I mean, Rick Scott is being accused of lying, like Gerald Bailey, the head of the
Adam Putman has something to say about this. Adam Putman is about to say something.
Yeah,
for governor's sake.
We've actually got Governor Scott and Adam Putman here, and we'll compare the two things just very quickly here. Here is Governor Scott when he was asked.
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Bailey for his service. He resigned. I picked Commissioner Swearingen.
Yeah, let's hear that again, Rick.
I picked Commissioner Swearingen, approved today by the cabinet. He's going to do a great job.
If I may say, most respectfully, sir, if I may say, you know, we know, Pete Antonacci went to FDLE and told Jerry Bailey, retire or resign. He was forced out of his job. He did not resign voluntarily. Would you agree with that, sir?
I'll tell you that Commissioner Bailey did a great job.
Okay, well, now then, Adam Putnam was asked shortly after that about the same issue, and here's what he had to say.
Commissioner, were you ever given an answer or told why Commissioner Bailey was forced to resign?
Well, certainly with the change of any administration, it is routine for there to be some turnover in agencies,
routine.
And we've seen that across the board, not just in FDLE.
But were you personally told by anyone in the Scott administration why Commissioner Bailey had resigned, and if there was any reason for his resignation?
Well, Commissioner Bailey served the state of Florida in an outstanding way. He certainly...
Well, that sounds like no, I wasn't told to me, Mitch.
Exactly. He wasn't told. Obviously not. And this is important, I mean, for Adam Putnam, because he's made to look like a little foolish here. And think about it. All three of the cabinet members, Putnam, Pam Bondi, and Atwater, they all have aspirations, you know, for higher office. And they cannot be seen as just going along with Governor Scott when Governor Scott maybe did something very wrong here, right? And so they've got to start speaking up and speaking out louder. And in fact, what isn't being really played apart much in the press, but again, Alex Sink said this on Rob Lurie's TV show over the weekend, is that there has to be a second cabinet figure, you know, to vote to terminate Gerald Bailey, or the FDLE chief. You need two for that particular position. Now, again, they weren't told that by Scott. They were told he resigned, so they didn't actually vote to fire him. But they should have had a vote to fire him. That's what Rick Scott wanted to do. So Rick Scott, you know, again, it's ugly, and it's going to be interesting how Team Scott plays this, because they should just kind of cut out, you know, confess what went on, unless it's really, you know, it's like a Bill Cosby thing, right? You know, Bill Cosby didn't come out and speak because it looks like these allegations of murder are pretty darn serious and he can't really win, you know, in the court of public opinion. If Rick Scott is really, the truth is what we're hearing Bailey say, I don't know what sanctions are going to go down, but it's going to be a stink. It's going to be a scandal. You know,
who would investigate him? Who would investigate him?
Well, you know, right, who would investigate? That's why Bill Nelson was asked that the other day. It cannot be the FDLE, obviously. It involves them, right? And they're our top, you know, agency here for something like this to happen. So it would go to the feds. And Bill Nelson, Senator Nelson, again, asked on this on Friday, suggested the feds were possibly looking into it. I mean, he said, and he didn't have any direct proof of that. But again, as this story continues to reverberate the press, I don't know if that means lawmakers need to like fold it over, or if it would be Attorney General Pam Bondi. I mean, I'm not really sure how that works
Without the authority here
to look at it, I think it's going to be the federal government.
Without over focusing on this particular aspect of this dishonesty and manipulation and organizing the truth the way you want, isn't there the parallel possible connection? Maybe in Nelson's mind, I hope so anyway, where Judge Lewis's decision about the redistricting issue and the handling of that by the legislature and anything they might touch in the future, where this might, these two things might encourage the Fed to come in and act.
Right. Well, you're right in terms of, that's what Nelson did reference. He referenced Eric Holder, Attorney General Holder, writing to the state last year, I think it was in August, when if you remember this whole thing with Kurt, well, actually you're talking about redistricting, but I'm thinking about the right to vote here in Florida. And remember, there over the past couple of years, there's been these purges of voters or attempted purges to take, you know, non-citizens out of the voting rolls.
Yep.
And that's been contentious. And Holder last year said, we at Justice are going to be looking at you, Florida, watching what you guys do. Now, there was no, the supervisor of the election did not do that last year. It just wasn't worth it. It was coming close to an election year. So he suggested, Eric Holder has done that in the case of looking at how our voting situation is down here, and so he's not beyond looking at it for something else like that. I think again, this story's going to stay in the press. The press is not going to, believe me, I can tell you that. I was reading some of the tweets over the weekend from some of the Tallahassee reporters, and they're all hot to trot with this thing, you know? They're not going to let it go. So we're going to keep on reading about it for a while.
Uh-huh. Well, I just mentioned earlier before you came on in another discussion with leaders like this who needs friends or something like that. But Leon Panetta just announced on Farik Zakarias on CNN yesterday that a moderate friend of ours called Saudi Arabia was going to be the needed element in the Middle East and the problems we have there. I mean, this judgment of what we have are as friends in government in the face of some of the, that we were talking on Friday on this show about the 28 pages of redacted information.
Augie, that's interesting you mentioned that, because I'm going to have a story coming out very shortly this morning that's alluding to those 28 pages, and the respect that we asked Bill Nelson, I asked him that the other day, because you know Bob Graham, right, has been going around trying to get those 28 pages of a Senate report on the 9/11, what happened after 9/11, released. And you're referencing this whole Saudi connection, and how maybe the Saudi government had you know, some links to the 9/11. You know, definitely we know 15 of the 19 hijackers came from Saudi Arabia. Anyway, so Bill Nelson, I have him quoted as saying that he calls Saudi Arabia duplicitous and two-faced, and he says other Middle East countries are like that too, and that they say one thing to try to placate their public, but now in reality they're fighting very hard against the terrorism. And I think that what Nelson was getting at was that the Saudis did maybe, you know, do some stuff back whenever, you know, and now they regret that, and now that they still have to say something for public consumption, but they're as worried as anybody about the virulent forms of terrorism now.
And of course, they're
working with us on, you know, battling ISIS right now, of course, in Iraq and Syria.
Well, isn't Peter Schorsch a little worried that he might get called out and taken to Saudi Arabia and flogged for having an improper blog? I mean, this thing is farcical at best, and at worst, downright dishonest. And we, our president, on the one hand, calls him out for the flogging, and on the other hand, says they're our best friend.
And it's been a while. We should remind people, we're speaking with Mitch Perry, who is now with stpetersblog.com, Peter Schwartz's publication, online publication. Mitch, by the way, Mitch, is there, besides St. Peter's blog, I see there's a Mitch Perry report there, too.
Yeah, so, I write a column every morning that goes up pretty early in the morning, I'm doing the same stuff, Henry, that I, you know, of course, I wrote it for Creative Loafing, announces it on a different website, but, you know, it's going well. A lot of interesting things going on, for sure. Hey, what about this presidential race? Do you guys think Marco Rubio is in it for the long haul?
Speaking about good friends, Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio. They're buddies, aren't they, Mitch?
Yeah, president and vice president, wouldn't you know? I mean, then you assure the Hispanic vote. That's for sure.
It's interesting, by the way, you know, Rubio's book came out last week, right? And so he's been doing all the press in New York and in D.C. And he keeps on telling people he's seriously thinking about running for president. Then again, you know, Mike Huckabee said that he's doing this yesterday. There's so many California arena. I was reading this morning. But I think that, let's be honest, though, Marco Rubio, I think he really, really does want to run for president, but there's going to be no money for him to fundraise for, right?
Every Jeb Bush
fundraiser say, sorry, Marco, we love you, but not your time.
They're all going to parade on stage, and I more than hope that Romney decides to do it a third time. I think this is the fitting echo of the 4 years ago. I think this is what we need. And,
there's a new CBS poll, and according to CBS polling, that Republicans want Mitt Romney to run more than any of the other candidates. You
exactly
see that, Mitch?
Right. Yeah.
You know, and some people are downplaying that and saying, well, that's his name recognition. But no, I think that let's take that for what it is. I mean, that's a reason why Romney is thinking about doing, other than the fact that all these guys, you know, you have to have a certain, belief in yourself to go do this. And he's been getting mocked mercilessly, though, since he announced this thing last week that he was serious about getting in by other Republicans to say, no, thank you, Mitt, we don't want you back. But as a reporter and as somebody who covers this stuff, you know, I mean, bring it on, like you say, you know. I mean, the more the merrier. I think, who knows? I mean, it's crazy, right? Jeb Bush did the last month, you guys. Jeb Bush came out. Everybody was pretty much waiting. Okay, we'll wait till 2015 before we start announcing, you know, we're going to run. We're not going to announce the rest of the election. And Jeb Bush got a head start on everybody in December. Nobody was really sure if he was going to, you know, get serious or not about it. He is completely serious. He's as serious as you can get on this thing. And he really has changed the whole field so early in this contest, but not that early, by the way. I'll remind listeners that 2007, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and John Edwards had all announced by that time in February. We're just in mid-January. We're just a couple weeks ahead of that. So it's not too early, but the Bush announcement is flipping out Mitt Romney. Now, Chris Christie's all laying back saying, we don't need to do anything just yet. But you're going to need to know by March or April. We're pretty much going to know everybody who's in this thing.
Well, don't you know, Mitch, it's I'm for poverty. And if you don't believe that, ask my wife, Ann. If you're going to offend her, you're going to really pee me off. I'm telling you, it's a situation that's going to make me run and run hard after all the Marriott money I can grab and any other.
Well, isn't it rich, Augie? I mean, and this is the thing. When I was saying about Marco Rubio, all these Republicans are talking about economic inequality, which actually is a good thing. I know people want to, especially when it comes from Mitt Romney, it's very hard to take seriously. However, Mr. 47%, but I think the Republicans, I heard Marco Rubio, he writes about this in his new book, but I heard him give a speech last month where he's really into this whole idea of, like, how it's like, you know, both parties are all going to be talking about this thing about how to raise wages for the middle class and how you do it. They'll have different ways of doing it. But Jeb Bush, his website's called Rise to Run, and he alludes to economic inequality. So, you know, whatever we want to say about that, you can say it's insincere. Well, if you don't believe these
Marco
guys,
Rubio actually
I think
has,
they realize that people don't want to talk about, even, you know, if ISIS is in the news or there's terrorism. No, the biggest story in America continues to be, you know, unemployment's going down. The people who do have jobs aren't making enough money in their jobs, and the middle class continues to, you know,
they have to have two jobs. That's why unemployment's going down. Isn't that right? They have to have two jobs, so every person seeking a job looks for two at the same time. I mean, this thing of
especially job. Reporters.
But I mean, the whole nonsense. Well, I shouldn't say that. That's not respectful. I realize that. But you, when the money's tied up in Florida,
that's never stopped you before, Augie.
No, I know. But this whole situation does reflect a consideration. Hillary, in the silence of her lonely room, is a big wonderment, and the person that's yanking her further and further to the left is, I think, that lady called Elizabeth Warren. And
right.
And so as people look to the left, further to the left, they discover poverty, jobs that need to be filled, and, of course, Bain Capital will be the first one to raise the wages of the countries and employees that are in those other countries, except the United States.
Mitch, we're up against the clock here, and I want to give you a chance to say whatever's on your mind to leave the audience with. But I just want to point out something to you and to Augie, because he wouldn't know this because he comes up from the, uses the Sarasota paper. But if there's any doubt, Mitch, that you are on the direction of media with the online media, I picked up the Bradenton Herald out of my driveway before I came to the station and just took a quick look at the headlines, which my normal thing, look at the front headlines, look at the local section headlines, and then look at the sports headlines maybe, just to see if there's anything I missed. And I look at the front page for those headlines, and then I go to the second section, and I see them sports headlines. I'm like, oh, did they reshuffle the paper here? And then I realize we didn't even have a second. We only had two sections of the Bradenton Herald today. Somewhere in the front section is the local news, I guess, and the sports section, and that was it.
I mean, they ran out of paper.
That's probably it.
Oh, there you go.
They didn't run out of advertisers,
well,
I'm sure.
Well, I think that's because the Sarasota Herald Tribune is the one that supplies their paper, actually.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Well, Mitch, what do you want to leave the audience with before we have to say goodbye?
I would just say that another big story to be watching out the rest of the next few months even is this whole announcement about Cuba, right? And even last Friday when the Obama administration announced that the levels of people who can go on licenses to travel to Cuba has been... basically, the paperwork has been reduced on that. You still have to be a certain person to go or be a part of a group to go, et cetera. But this is really interesting. I mean, and then later this week, our people in our State Department people are meeting in Cuba right now. We'll wait and see, right? Raul Castro doesn't seem to be in any quick mood to kind of, like, all of a sudden give a lot of human rights to people in Cuba. And I think that's the key thing, to see if economic sanctions are going to go away anytime in the next few years. This is in the papers every day now, right? I mean, Obama, in his last 2 years, he's doing things now that he's not worried about being reelected or about the Congress, what have you. And he's doing as much as he can with executive orders, including, trying to reestablish relations with Cuba, which is a huge thing for the Tampa Bay area, and specifically the city of Tampa, who a lot of officials here have been really working hard to try to, be in position to really capitalize on this as ultimately, the sanctions do end, or just at least the relations get warmer between the two countries.
Well, Mitch, thanks for joining us. Heads up to you. The rivalry between Port Manatee and Port Tampa is going to heat up over Cuba. February 6th, here on the Morning Edge, we'll have Manatee County Commissioner Carol Whitmore, who is also the head of the Port Commission and the Port Director, talking about their plans to make Port Manatee the number one port to Cuba. So, Mitch, thanks again for joining us. Good luck at stpetersblog.com. We'll be watching.
Light up your cigar.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Okay.
I don't know if he always follows where we're going.
I know.
Well, wow, what a show, Augie.
We had a little bit of activity. We went from people in the future life and now to the afterlife, the living dead. I think that's our governor.
Oh, I think you should be kinder to us than that.
I was referring to our governor.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll be back on Wednesday, maybe just the two of us.
All right.
Another Morning Edge.